Hello and welcome to The Mailbag, a new feature of the Male Fertility Podcast. It's Sean here this week to answer your questions that have come in via email, Instagram, or our support community platform over at Nexus Fertility. As a sperm donor recipient father, I get a lot of questions about how I came to terms with that and what it's like on the other side. So I thought that for this week, I will create a special episode dedicated to that because it's obviously such an important topic for me and for all of you as well. So many questions came in about it. So what I've done is grouped those numerous questions into six similar themes so I can address as many of the questions that came in as possible. Now, what I will say before I start giving my own perspective, my lived experience, is to harness the use of the support that's out there from your clinic or your sperm bank. They all offer support services and counselling. It can be really useful. So I'd urge you to seek that out as well. My perspective is my perspective. It's what worked for myself and my wife, but it's important to get as much support from as many areas as you can. Without further ado, let's get into it. So a common question, and it's a good one to start at the top, I think, because it's all around how I came to terms with needing to use donor sperm and letting go of my ability to pass on my genetics. So it's a long process, to be honest, and that's what I'll say. It goes for everything that I'll probably share throughout this episode, is that you go for a journey, really. And with that loss of genetics, it's all part of the grieving process, which I didn't know I was going through at the time, actually. I was being dragged through it a lot of the times, feeling angry and not knowing why, or sad. And it's all completely normal when you look back at it with hindsight. But at the time, when you're just trying to put one foot in front of the other, get through the next appointment or the next week, and you're going through this unwittingly, and you don't know why you're angry, you don't know why you're resentful at certain things, friends with pregnancy announcements, for example. When I look back now, it's actually normal, and of course it was the right thing for me to be doing. But part of that grieving process, I was letting go of that dream that I had of having my own children, my own biological children, and rebuilding new foundations, really, who I wanted to be as a father. And the last part of a grieving process is acceptance. It's the hardest point to get to. But when I started to get towards, that's where I started readdressing who I was as a person, who I was as a husband, and who I wanted to be as a father. And that's how I started letting go of one thing, i.e. my ability to pass on my genetics and have biological children, and started to build a new future, a hope of a new future. Because that's not forget also that there's so many uncertainties in IVF, and this was just crossing a massive barrier. There was no guarantee that I was going to have children as a result, but it was a massive psychological barrier to get over to even progress towards that and towards being able to use donor sperm. So that was all about essentially establishing who I was as a person and asking my wife who I was as a person, because it's a hard question to ask yourself. How many times do we really sit down and try and consider who we are and ask ourselves those hard questions? So I asked my wife, like, what was it that she loved about me to want to settle down and marry me, hopefully start a family? And it was her answer that started allowing me to really reform my identity, because that identity had been stripped with infertility, questioning who I was as a man. And the things that she told me, they were things that weren't dependent on being able to pass my genetics, my resilience, my character, my humour, my love, my just everything about me as a person that she fell in love with was not dependent on DNA and me passing that on. Yeah, I started to realise that actually all of those things were character traits, and that's what I had the ability to pass on still, of course. So that's where I started to really build those bridges and come to terms with the fact that being a parent, being a father, was not dependent on being able to pass on DNA. It was being able to pass on all of those really important and powerful elements of being a person, being a good human being. Now, another very common source of questions was around the fears about using donor sperm. And yeah, it's a biggie. It is a biggie because, of course, right, there were fears at the time. I have fears now still, coming to terms of using donor sperm. I was really fearful that around that connection piece, which I think is very common and everyone goes through, is will I feel connected to my sperm donor conceived children. And even I remember when my wife was pregnant and the first few times that the twins would kick, she would say, "Oh, they're kicking, come over," and I'd feel it. And it was amazing the first few times. And then she would encourage me to talk to the bump. And then a few times after, over the months, she would say, "Oh, they're kicking, come and feel them." And I couldn't be bothered, to be quite frank. I'd be comfortable on another sofa. So then my mind started kicking in and it was saying, like, "Is that because they're not yours? Is that because you haven't got that connection?" And what I realized in hindsight and being able to talk to friends now about this afterwards, because also this was lockdown, one of the lockdowns. So I didn't have that ability to be in the pub or just chatting with mates. And these are friends with biological children, by the way. And having spoken to them, they're all like, "Oh no, we felt that way too." So I think it was a bit of a man thing, but also it shows the power of the mind, because my subconscious was kicking in saying, "Oh, is that because you haven't got that connection? Would you be over there in a shop if you were biologically connected to those children?" And yeah, it's that those fears really do play on your mind a lot. It's around how things are going to be, because it is a big unknown. It's a life-changing thing to have children. Obviously, you strive so much when you're going through fertility treatment to get there. And then when you go an alternate route, such as donor conception, all those fears do kick in. And on the other side, when they were born, they evaporate very quickly. I can assure you that. And it's not a given. You have to show up every day and you grow that love, like you grow that love with anyone that you have in your life that comes into it later, like your significant other, for example. Outside of films, does love at first sight truly exist? Like when you meet someone, no, you work on that. And it's the same with children. I don't think that is something that even a biologically related parent would say, is that, "Oh yeah, oh, everything changed at that moment." Love takes a lot of work, and it's no different with children who are born via alternate means and routes. And it's special. I still have fears. Of course I do. I'm going to be living as a donor recipient father for the whole of my life. I have fears that in those tricky teenage years, that stuff that will be said in anger, such as, "You're not even my real dad." But then I think, how many biologically related children have said to their biologically related father, "I wish you weren't my real dad"? This is things that are said in anger with teenage hormones, like swirling around. So yeah, of course, there's always going to be fears, but that's what makes it a special route, is that we have to address those. You have to try and preempt these before you even get there, before you even decide to use donor sperm. And that decision to use donor sperm is not one that is easy, because another group of questions came in about how long did I or we decide to pick our donor and how, because people find it overwhelming, and it is overwhelming. Now, in our case, we decided to use the sperm bank in our own clinic. Now, what that did was two things. Firstly, it meant that there was a lot less choice. But secondly, it reduced our stress of having to look elsewhere, any other sperm banks in the UK or abroad. We were at the stage where we just needed to make decisions that were less mentally burdening on us, because we were mentally exhausted, we were physically drained, and our clinic had a bank there. So it was an obvious choice for us, but that then gave us a lot less choice on the other side once we made our selection of what we were looking for in a donor. And it's those choices really that I think can often hold people back as well. Is I think you have to ask yourself, what are you, when you're making those selections about characteristics of a donor, what are you looking to do? In my case, in the male case that we're here to talk about, are you trying to replicate the male partner who is losing or has lost their ability to pass on their genetics and that genetic resemblance? Are you looking to recreate them? Because that's impossible. That person is an individual and you'll never be able to recreate them. So we let go of that quite early on, and our selections were almost straight down the line, really, of my wife and I, because we wanted a child or children to still look and fit in with our family and with us. We knew it was going to be a complex route of parenthood anyway, so we wanted to reduce some of those complexities by having children fitted in and look like our part of us, our little family and our extended family as well. And we weren't just trying to replicate me And because we knew that no matter what we got back, it would just never be right. And then we chose not to look at baby pictures or anything like that, because again, we had that discussion of what would we be looking for? A really super cute baby, but then you're making judgments on looks. And yeah, it was something that I'm glad we decided on quite early, because you might look at physical characteristics and eliminate someone who could be the perfect donor. We took a more wider and holistic approach on that one, that things such as health markers and just general physical appearance and biometric data that fitted in with our family, other than those the more subjective looks or anything like that. So yeah, and in terms of the time frame, it's a hard one, because it was probably before we knew we needed 100% to use a donor. It was a good year and a half, really, of me considering whether I could do that. And really exploring who I was as a person, as I've covered. And then I decided that I was content and comfortable to move forward with donor sperm before I'd had a micro-TZ. And I didn't want to have the operation. My wife encouraged me to have it so that there wouldn't always be this question mark in my mind as to what if I had done it. And I was like, there's no point. I'm happy to move on with donor sperm. As it happens, once I had the micro-TZ and it was a negative result, it still took a couple more months after that, two or three more months, really, because that door was closed forever. And it was a very final thing. And that surprised me. And it shows the complexities of what we're dealing with here. It's not as simple as going, no, I made this decision. Let's crack on. I'm happy to move forward with donor sperm. Because actually, there are things that can throw that off a little bit, and it's right to do so. Then we, following that micro-TZ, took a bit of a break. I needed to recover physically, and I needed a bit more time just to consider things. And like, we went on a holiday, we talked a lot. And yeah, I came back around. There was a really important moment, actually, in my journey, so to speak, of we were on holiday in the south of France, and I started playing football on the beach with this little French kid. He must have only been three. And he didn't speak any English, I don't speak any French. But it shows that being able to bond and communicate with someone enough by other means, like, I had nothing in common with this kid. When we had a great time, my wife captured it on a photo. And I came back and sat down, and she said, that was so lovely. It was great seeing you do that. And it made me realize then, yeah, okay, I can do this. Let's start moving forward. And it was after that holiday, we came back and we started making some choices around our selection pieces, because yeah, that's what I wanted. And that was not reliant on DNA.
This podcast is sponsored by Exceed Health. Exceed understand how vital it is to stay ahead of the game with your fertility. Their at-home sperm tests show exactly where you're starting from. No NHS queues, no pricey clinics, no stress. You don't even have to send the sample through the post. By harnessing your phone's camera with the Exceed device, you can record a video of your semen for the app to analyze in minutes. Doctors are just a message or free video call away, with personalized tips to boost your motile count. Get 15% off today by visiting exceedhealth.com with discount code MFP15. That's MFP15.
And on that topic of genetic link and looks and resemblance and stuff like that, a lot of questions came in about how I deal with comments around people making, like saying, oh, resemblance. It's a big thing. As soon as you have a new baby, people, strangers, are sticking their head into the pram saying, oh, aren't they lovely? Completely unsolicited, unwelcome, uninvited. And they'll say stuff like, where do they get those curls from, or that ginger hair? And you can't stop it. It's impossible. It's just ingrained in society or something. And people say, how do you deal with that? And I've been on a bit of a journey with that myself. And I think it's all part of where I was with my infertility and sharing stuff. I started sharing my story a month before the kids were born. And it was definitely part of my healing as well to do. And then so when they were born, I was still on this journey of like really enjoying starting to tell it. I found it quite liberating. And it was almost a way of getting back at these people who just stick their head into the pushchair and say, oh, who do they look like? And I would say, actually reused donor sperm, so they're not genetically related to me, so we don't know. It could be the donors. And if people of a certain generation would just look at you with shock and surprise and not know what to say. And I'm not saying this is right for everyone. And of course, like, you have some people will just keep the story to themselves, as you should. It's a deeply personal thing, but this was just where I was. But I don't do that anymore. I don't need to. So I think what I do now is probably a more common approach. And it is part of it. When, as I mentioned, the fears of using any kind of donor, they do evaporate when the kids are here because you're living it every day. And now those comments, they come up and you just say, oh, we're not sure. We think probably from my wife's grandfather or grandmother or something like that. Well, they just laugh it off. You have ways of just brushing these questions off. You don't need to go into depth at all with strangers. Of course you don't. I just quite enjoyed it for a period, but I don't do it anymore. Are they triggering? No, they never really have been. As I said, what I used to do at the beginning was just say that to get a reaction from them and really almost just test them and throw it back on them just to let them know that those kind of unsolicited comments aren't really appropriate. But yeah, no, they're not triggering because there's so much love there. And actually what we do get, I say we, my wife gets quite a lot of her friends who know our story, but can't say to her, look, I know what route you've taken to parenthood, but my word, Ray doesn't half look like Sean. And she's always, oh, okay, really? I don't see it. Like, because I think it's different when people are probably only seeing the kids every once in a while or through Instagram or whatever. But yeah, she gets that quite a lot. But weirdly, no one's ever said that to me, which I don't really know why, but I'm completely comfortable. And it's a compliment for me because he's a handsome kid. I'll take that. But yeah, I think ultimately with that, you learn your own way out of dealing with it. And at first it can be more tricky, but that's part of becoming a donor recipient parent. You learn your ways of fending off questions or comments, and then you just learn what works for you and you hone that over time. We want to tell you about Impril, the unique supplement for conception, which is recommended by fertility specialists for both men and women. We know that poor nutrition is one of the leading causes of infertility, but we are also aware that it's practically impossible to maintain a diet that's perfectly balanced, especially for conception. Choosing the right supplement can be confusing. Many multivitamins contain strong antioxidants, which may actually damage sperm quality. Impril is made from activated micronutrients, which help every cell within the human body, from the biggest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These micronutrients have been clinically proven to significantly improve live birth rates for men and women who have previously been struggling to get pregnant. You can find out more and hear from couples who have used Impril by visiting fertilityfamily.co.uk. If you decide this is for you, there's a 10% discount just for our listeners. So make a note of the code MFPODCASTS10. That's capital M, capital F, podcast, all in lowercase, 10.
And a common question that comes through and certainly did prior to this episode was, will we or are we going to be, or are we already telling our kids about the fact that a donor conceived? And the answer to that one is yes. So we went through a bit of a process on this one at first. We didn't know whether we were going to or not. And it was through education and speaking to the counsellor at our clinic that our thoughts on this turned to a firm yes. The previous generation, say my parents' era, who were going through donor conception, they were told by professionals, don't tell, there's no need to tell, they're never going to find out. Because those professionals had no idea where the world was going to go with the internet, with the ease of at-home DNA testing, with websites like Ancestry.com. Genealogy is interesting. People like to find out their backgrounds, even if you have no known alternate routes, whether it's adoption or donor conception or whatever. Even if you have quite a boring route to, like, in life and a family tree, people still want to delve. And that's what has fueled this growth in DNA tests and stuff. And those professionals didn't know how easy that was going to become and that people were going to find out quite easily sometimes. And what was pointed out to us, which is quite important, is that it might not even be your donor-conceived children trying to find out about their own history or relatives. People can contact them, because there's so many other people out there, donor-conceived children, young adults, for example, who are trying to find out and might do their own sleuthing online and contact your kids. And so you have to be prepared for that. And what I was doing a lot was listening to podcasts where young donor-conceived adults were talking about their stories, and the overwhelming opinion of people who weren't told. And they were saying loads of these people were raised with full of love and in a really happy environment. But they always said, once they were told, it was like this big bombshell because it had been kept a secret. But also, they've all said the same thing. There was always something. I always knew there was something there. And I was talking to a donor-conceived adult recently in person, and she said the exact same thing. She was raised without knowing, and once she did find out, she said there was always something there. And I think that, for me, was such a game changer in our opinion. There's a really useful book called Free Makes Baby, and it can really educate you on where you're at. It meets you at every stage, whether it's preconception, pregnancy, or even after birth. It's a valuable resource, and our opinion changed firmly on that. And it's about identity, really. And if you're raising a kid in the full knowledge of how they came to be, then it's like a suit of armor, really. There's no shame there. There's no secret. Nothing to come out later in life. And so we made that decision. We've been telling them early, telling them often, practicing it from when they were babies. Like when they're just, they have absolutely no idea what's being said. It's just gibberish, like anything else. My wife might say that anything I talk is gibberish, to be fair, but that what that would do is not for their benefit at that age, it's for us practicing telling them and getting used to saying it out loud to your donor-conceived child. It's a very deeply personal story and thing to go through and share. And then there are books that you can use, and you can get them specifically for whatever kind of donation you've used. So obviously we bought a couple of sperm donation books, and it takes you for a journey of the story about needing medical intervention. Daddy didn't have any seeds, for example. But in fairness, we got a couple of those. They didn't really work for us that well, and kids just weren't that interested. What our daughter especially likes is for me to tell it like a fairy tale. So once upon a time, Prince Daddy met Prince Mummy, and they wanted to settle down together. They got married and became king and queen. And then they wanted a child, but Daddy didn't have any seeds. And then I go through the story, and she loves it. And for ages, she thought I was saying donut rather than donor. And it was just really sweet. And then the story obviously nicely rounds off with, then we had you and Ray, and we all lived happily ever after. She loves it. She's really into all Disney princesses and stuff at the moment. So you find your way. It's a bit like I was saying earlier about how you deal with comments about resemblance, etc. You find what works for you, whether it's reading books, telling stories, telling fairy tales. But yeah, I would say it's not for me to say that you must tell kids, you must be open and honest. All the research out there, all the professionals will say that's the advice now, because it is all too easy for these things to come out and for people to find out and be dropped like a bombshell. So yeah, we took the approach that our children, if they're raised with it from the outset and empowered with it, then it just becomes part of who they are, part of their identity. And that, of course, the most important thing is for them to know that they are loved very deeply. So yeah, I hope all of that was very useful for everyone. They were like the most common themes that came up. Grouped into some headline topics there. But as always, you know where we are. As I said, email, Instagram, Nexus. Come and join us over at Nexus Fertility. We have a really supportive community group there of men. Men only chat, couple partner and couples chat function. And we run loads of events. I've run one previously with a bunch of donor recipient fathers who have all used donor sperm, given their thoughts and perspectives on it. Get your questions in, keep them coming in, and then we'll address them on these mailbag episodes.